This is the 1895 Podcast, official podcast of Shelburne FC, bringing you news, views and interviews from inside Tolka Park, Dublin's finest since 1895. Here's your host, Stephen Duty.
Hello, welcome to the 1895 Podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne Football Club. We are brought to you by Go Loud. Go Loud is the home of Irish podcasts. This week, I am joined by Ben Cleary. Ben, how are you?
Hello, Duty. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you get the Reggie line in early. And somebody else snuck in to see us as well. Darren Cleary, how are you?
I'm well. What did I say when you asked me to do this?
You asked me, was I really stuck?
And what did you say back? You went on a big rant and said, stick it.
Yeah, pretty much. But you're here for your age.
Jesus.
That'll make sense later. So, we'll get last week addressed first. We'll start on Saturday for a change, Ben. The Women's Premier Division side. A frustrating 0-0 draw, fair to say?
Yeah, I think frustrating just really sums it up. I think if you look on paper, obviously the stats were there to back up the performance. I think it was a strong performance, but I just think that finishing wasn't there. It's just a bit of luck didn't go their way on the day. And it's probably a tough one to take for the group.
I generally would watch the game and form my own opinion, and then I'll usually look at the manager's interview after to see if it's miles off or not. I think the first word Owen Whelan used was frustrating. Probably it's happened a couple of times this year, really, hasn't it? More so early in the season.
Yeah, it's I think it may be a bit of an anomaly performance, but I think you could probably telegraph it, see that it was coming a little bit. They come up against a side that are in form. Like, it's never going to be easy. So maybe it was just a little bit of start-stop getting to them and the breaks in the season that's obviously not doing the momentum any help or any justice. So I do think it's a bit of an anomaly. I don't think you'll see it again, I hope. I think this group are a really good group. I think they've a lot behind them, and obviously a new sign at the back.
Yeah, look, on the goals probably is the best way to... It's probably the biggest point to make. Dazzler, is it nearly a good thing that that's where the problem lay on Saturday? That surely putting the ball in the net is not an easy fix, but it's quite an obvious fix.
Yeah, it's one of those where I think the performance had everything except a goal. It was really positive. The winning run the team have been on, the unbeaten run the team have been on, they've been able to win ugly in recent weeks, and I think that'll really stand to them. It felt like a real sign of maturity that, like, the team was going to be built not too dissimilar to how Shells were built in 2022, where the first thing you do to put your stamp on a team is make them very mean defensively and then kind of work your way up at the top end of the pitch. It's one of those where it's hard to judge in isolation, but like the league generally has thrown up some wild results. There has been a few surprises that you're probably, you know, we would have been fancied to beat Wexford, but I don't think, one of the things about them is they probably haven't got the recognition they deserve because the silverware hasn't been as forthcoming as it was, but like they were pushed just right to the death in basically a league decider a couple of years ago. They're a quality team. They're never going to be easy. And it's one of those where if you can't win it, just don't lose it. So I don't think it's a disappointing result. Obviously no longer top of the table, which came from the bye week the week before. I just think Ben mentioned the stop start nature of things. That's very, very hard to reconcile and get your head around. I think it hurts on and off the pitch really.
Another 2.5 weeks before there's another competitive game. What, like, I don't know, I'm looking at you for the answers here. What is the reason? I know, last year the
international call ups for Sligo, wasn't it? This time around the game was moved for underage international call ups.
You'd like to think, like, if you want to move on and, like, you know, get the standards up, surely, although, look, Bose did it on the men's side of things, like, they kind of made a bit of a joke of the whole thing where they basically kept two lads on the books to get a game called off. So it's just, I can't imagine how frustrating, especially for Owen in his first year. Like, you want that continuity, you want, like, the whole winning breeds winning thing, and then Ben, you're just up and down, start stop. the positive probably of the 2.5 week break is Kate Mooney can get her feet under the table and settle in.
Yeah, I think it'll be massive just getting into the group, obviously training with the group. I know she probably knows a lot of the players already, but I think it is good to just get the time under the belt on the training ground, kind of get used to the place again. Obviously, she's been away, so I'd say it's probably very nice for her being back, and I think it adds an awful lot of quality up top. As you say, maybe goals is what we lacked the last day. And look, I think this week, a quote that we've heard a decent bit from the men's side of thing is, competition is the best coach. So I think that'll be really positive and really good for that side.
Obviously, Kate Mooney in the door, two names out the door, Kerry Letton and Leah Riley. Is it a case of Owen Whelan is kind of seeing now what he does and doesn't want?
Yeah, I think it's probably just competition for places. It's probably just going to get a little bit harder to nail down those spots. And you see that, like, the team does change, like, every week. It's not a consistent 11 most weeks. There's some nailed on, but there's some that'll come into the side and are like, where's that come from? They'll have an impact and they'll stay in the side. So I'd say it's probably just a case of, again, not too dissimilar from the men's side of things, just bodies coming in. I'm sure there's academy players being looked at. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of moving cogs. So maybe it's just a case of they weren't needed here. They weren't going to get the game time they maybe wanted or deserved. So it's just a case of moving them on.
The mad fashion of that Women's Premier Division, Dazzler. We were talking about P-Mount and ourselves on here a few weeks ago. Galway had been a bit of a surprise package, and all of a sudden that low on the top of the league by 3 points. It's kind of putting an end to that whole thing of, it's very predictable. You know, you'll have Shells, P-Mount, and everyone thought Rovers were going to be the be-all, end-all, but hasn't really panned out that way.
Yeah, we're waiting on them to change the game. It'll happen any minute now. they've made their promise. They've told us they'll change it, like they did with Rovers B, and look, we'll have to take them on face value because Rovers B worked out so well. Kate Mooney's a great addition, right? Because it shows the ability to attract players from Scotland. Obviously, she was most recently with Tarts. In good form there, but I don't know if she ever really properly settled. Had obviously moved around a bit since leaving the League of Ireland, but started her career at Shells. And for Owen Whelan to be able to attract players like that back, like, there is going to be a rebuild job at the club in the next 12 months, you'd imagine. You know, you don't want to think of days without some of the greatest Reds to ever pull on the jersey, female or male. But the reality is that the clock is probably ticking, and some players have less time ahead of them than they have behind them. So I think Kate Mooney is one of those that, like, you know, you're never really going to find anyone that'll fill in Noel Murray's boots, but you have to bring in quality. You have to bring in people who understand maybe the ethos and the culture and can continue what's been built by the players who came before them. So what's the ambition for this year? Like, I think Owen might have put a bit of pressure on himself by saying it's to win leagues and to win cups, but the reality is, when you're at Shells and you've been the standard setter for so long, you have to talk like that. You can't feel your way into the job. There's an awful lot of pressure. It's probably, let's be honest, one of the most desirable jobs in Irish women's football. Like, I can't imagine there's very many more above the Shells job at this time in its life. So it's a good sign, and hopefully one of many more. You'd imagine, like, with players going, it's not good to see bit part players going, but it kind of tells you that, you know, he's looking to bring in starters, and he's looking to bring in competition, and he's looking to bring in players who aren't there to fill a bench. And that's no disrespect to the two girls that are leaving, but it didn't really feel like they were going to be massively involved, you felt.
I think that's important. I think it's important that, look, if you see players there that just aren't going to feature, you'd probably rather have smaller numbers, but people who you think are going to be able to feature regularly in the team. Like, we've spoken before about trying to have that depth in the squad. It's already having depth, but, like, we've seen in the past, more so on the men's side, probably there's no point having those bodies there if they can't come off the bench or come into the team and affect it. So yeah, I support it. It's a bit cutthroat, but you have to be, like, it's not kids football. You're there to win trophies, and you won't do it by having, I don't want to say stragglers, it's probably a bit harsh, but, you know, you only want people there that are going to be able to affect the group. That result obviously was Saturday. On Thursday, and it threw everyone's week off. I was all over the shop. Ben, you were all over the shop. Your poor mother.
Yeah.
Put the frighteners up her.
Yeah, my poor mother was in work Friday morning, and I rang her to see where she was because I woke up and she wasn't there. And I was like, what's going on? And she was like, what's wrong? In a panic. I was like, nothing. Like, where are you? She's like, I'm in work. I'm like, oh, it's Friday today. So it really threw me off.
It threw everyone off. I was the same. I got home on Thursday and I was like, oh, grand, a little eye on now in the morning. Nope. That alarm went off bright and breezy.
Darren, how was your Thursday?
Yeah, you've been off sunning yourself, haven't you?
Yeah, I've got a great colour. As see, which everyone's laughing because I'm the same shade of white when I left. I just sit under an umbrella with whatever the cheapest cocktail is on the menu, and that's me. Happy. I don't really love the sun, but I enjoy the experience. I was on the way to day two of a wedding, and I was in the back of a taxi there, and you know, following the game on LOI TV. I got the E on the phone, so you know the feed went out. I'm like, it's actually grand. We haven't been great in the second half, but we're doing well. We should have put them away in the first half. We're all right. Feed came back. It was like 1-1, and we were down to
those
nine
two
men.
Little red cards at the top.
Yeah, I was like, oh, hold on. Like, I think it was gone for 5 minutes, and whatever it was, 78-82 was when we lost two men and had had the penalty conceded. So yeah, it was an interesting Thursday. Probably wasn't much fun for the first hour of the day two, or maybe any hour of it, to be fair.
Those day twos are hard anyway.
Yeah, sometimes. Hard going.
Ben, we were there. It felt a bit in the first half like, oh, we're leaving these in it a little bit. We didn't really carve them open much, but like Evan Caffrey had a shot well saved. I think we had a shot well saved to start the second half. Caffrey again. We just kind of left them in it for too long, didn't we?
Yeah, I think, like, it's weird to say because it's probably been our best performance against them this season or up there. With, like, they didn't look like they could do anything. They also didn't even look like themselves. Like, they looked like a bit of a shell of themselves in the first half. Like, we were all over them. It just kind of looked like you need to get that second goal. You need to get that sucker punch to just keep them down. And it just was... You think it was coming. There was obviously a few chances, as you said, but it just never came. And look, if you give them anything to cling on to, any kind of shred of hope, you've seen it. They've done it with a lot of teams, especially out there. They will cling on to it and they will cause you bother. And that's what they did.
Tyreek Wilson, dare I say, went full Kev Doherty with that header in the corner. Smallest body on the pitch and pops up a header. What I will say is the delivery from Evan Caffrey was... out of this world. Like, Tyreek didn't have a whole lot to do. It's one now, it's just make contact with it. But probably the last player in the pitch you would have thought it'd pop up with a header.
Dirty.
Very careful there.
Not in this day and age.
No, be very careful.
Not in this
there.
Day and age. Yes, look, I wasn't there, so I'm not going to comment very much on it. But it was.
Did you watch the highlights?
Yeah, I watched it, yeah.
So then.
You feel like a bit
talk of. Me through the goal.
You feel like a bit of a fraud. You know?
Do, yeah. No, I agree with that.
I got called out one time, not by the current manager, but a former manager for having an opinion on this podcast, which wasn't backed up by watching the game at least 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, do your research.
Yeah.
3 times you're supposed to watch that 90 minutes back on top of your day job.
Yeah.
Look, it's not hard. What I would say as well is watching the highlight packages back isn't always a fair reflection of the game either, because they tend to leave out glaringly obvious stuff.
So this has come up before, and like, I remember someone telling me, no, it's the FAI pay for it, so they're obviously leaving out anything that would make the FAI look bad, like referees' mistakes. It's actually not like it. I think a lot of it is people are writing up the kind of the clip notes as they're going based on Opta or one of the stats platforms, and they're quite dry in their delivery. Like, they're not going to tell you an unbelievable, world-class, amazing save. They're probably not going... Like, Opta don't give you penalty shouts. Like, Opta are not going to say, Shelburne, have a big shout.
That's
for a penalty.
That's a good point, actually, yeah.
So they're basing what they're clipping off the information that's available to them. Because I don't want to give you a look inside the sausage factory, but it's not someone sitting there watching all the games. Like, there's one bloke in England putting together the highlights packages and bits are missed. But I prefer the way it's done now, right? Because if... we were putting together the highlights package, it'd be 9 minutes of Shells looking deadly, and you'd never really include anything that you didn't want to. So we were at Bend, I can't remember, one of the workshops pre-season. Someone suggested, could clubs input to their own highlights packages, like supply notes. I was dead against it because the home club will invariably only be interested in what their they
own. Do. Yeah, if that was us, I'd probably be like, Mark Coyle made 7 tackles, include all of them, please.
Yeah, yeah, like it's one of them where, like, not being bad, but we don't even bother including some of the yellow cards for opposition and the comment because who cares?
Don't get me started on comment. Try and help people and they'll get in trouble.
Dude, you don't need to put the assists in, okay?
Give a good look inside the sausage
factory. What's the problem? I don't understand the problem with putting the assist in when there are blatantly obvious assists.
So explain it.
So Comet comes from the FAI Connect app. You go into it. It's like a live score, flash score, whatever app you use. So somebody from the home club has to input the information. So if there's a yellow card, penalty, goal, whatever it is, and you put in... So if it's a yellow card, you click on the player's name and it brings up why they were yellow carded, all that kind of stuff. You can change the minute, you have to input the subs, everything. So I don't always deal for home games, but I said I'd give the ex-admin a dig out and I'd look after FAI Connect for him. And I very quickly was told, they're after being on to me there and you're not supposed to put in the assists for the goals. Why have it as an option? What's the point?
Fair point.
Like you just turned to me and you looked so right. You're like, "Why don't I'm putting in the assists. I don't care."
But they have a separate part of FAI Connect that has the stats in it. Has assists, yellow cards, red cards, goals. So what's the point? Why have it if you don't want it used? Waste of time.
Hey, look, I'm not the biggest fan of Comet. And
also, if
free data entry and free... labor for the FAI. I mean, it's their app. I do not mean to be in any way smart, but they don't really help clubs on a match night with our operation and what we need to do. So why do they expect us to then drop everything we're doing and do all of their work for them?
Look, I couldn't have said it better myself.
I expect a fine.
But also, I don't know whether anyone from the staff listens to this, but stop making loads of changes at once because it's a pain in the arse.
For the Comet operator. Comet,
yeah, it's a pain in the arse. It's a huge, huge pain in the neck.
I'd say that's the main consideration before.
Yeah, yeah. So if you could just scatter them a little bit, that would be fantastic. You might lose one of your stoppages, but look, you'd make me very happy. Oh, speaking of yellow cards and red cards, Ben, let's just get there. First one's Paddy Barrett for 2 yellows. Your thoughts?
I thought in real time maybe it was a little bit harsh, but I think it's when he sticks the kind of leg out, isn't it?
Yeah. I'd agree on the Paddy one. I think it was 2 yellows. Like, it's definitely 2 yellows. Whether they're a little bit soft or whatever way you want to put it, I don't think so. I do think that one was a red.
Was it a dirty game overall?
No,
it really wasn't.
Was there a lot of cards?
There was a few, yeah, but yeah. I think...
It's just a bit trigger happy, I think.
Yeah, the previous games with Drogheda have been worse. Like, have been more kind of intense than that. I think Drogheda missing so many players probably didn't help the intensity of the game. And obviously, our good friend Gary Deegan wasn't playing, so that was probably a guaranteed yellow when he's not able to get back to tackle somebody properly.
Friend of the pod.
Yeah, friend of the club, I'd say.
Well-liked man.
Yeah.
popular guy.
Do you know what kills me, right? He was like... the dawning of a good new era when he signed originally. It was like, that's a great sign.
Yeah, remember statement. The Gary Deegan meme, the video on...
Yeah, with him shouting into the camera. Yeah. How wrong we were, huh? How wrong we were.
I made that one and I feel even worse.
Just look, I have to deal with it at the time. But I'm interested where you want to go with this one, Ben, for Tyreek. I don't remember his first yellow. I don't actually remember what it was
for. I actually don't remember the first yellow either.
But the second yellow... Come on, hit me. What's your thoughts?
I don't think it is a second yellow. Like, I think he goes close down across and it hits his hand. Like, is the double whammy rule only a thing if it's a straight red or what? Like, what's kind of the...
Yeah, so the only time a handball... Right, there's a few bits to this.
Right, go on.
It's losers being at the laws of the game.
Oh.
They're not rules. They're laws.
IFAB or whatever they're called. I have the thing downloaded here. I was going through it.
Gary Deegan, iCrab.
Yeah. Today I got paid to sit and go through the rule book, basically. That's what I did in work today. when I should have been.
I hope your boss isn't listening.
No. He has much better things to do. So, you don't get, like, it used to be, you know, the ball to hand and all that type of crack. So, unfortunately, the ref was right, if you're going by the law and the way you kind of put it out there. So, my dad comes back at me all the time with, well, if the ref is blowing up for a handball, he has to give a yellow, because the only time you give a handball is if it's deliberate. That's not the way it is anymore. It used to be like that, but it's not. So basically, it's the whole thing of, you know, if you use your arms to make yourself bigger, basically. If the ball hits your hand when you've made yourself bigger, it's a foul straight away, yellow card, which is fine. If it's done in the box, pretty much, it's a yellow. That's pretty much where it stands. Now, but the problem I have with that is there's two different, for some reason we use, like if you go onto the FAI website and you go to look for the laws of the game, it redirects you to the English FAs, which is fine, but the badges at the top are the Northern Irish FA, the Welsh FA, the Scottish FA, and the English FA. So I don't know what story is there, but UEFA then have a different, it's altered slightly. So if you're watching the Champions League or the Conference League, as we all will be, it changes slightly, but unfortunately, the ref was right. Kills me to say. Because I'm not one for what?
Referee bashing.
Yeah. Oh, let him say it. Make him say it.
I am not one for referee bashing. But on this particular occasion, the referee was right, unfortunately.
Now, look, I don't want to speak too much on referees, but dude, you will attest to this. The carry on was a little bit much. Like, no approach on the referee, no talking to him. You could see it an awful
lot.
It's
bizarre.
I thought it was just the Euros. Like,
no, so the Euros brought in a thing where the captain can speak to the referee.
And no one else.
Yeah, so you can't, like, surround them, which I do agree with.
That rule is fine, but...
Yeah.
But they haven't brought it in here yet, so...
No.
Well, you think that if you watch Thursday's game.
Yeah, I've said that before. I don't mind decisions, you miss a decision or whatever. The whole thing of go away. Like,
but that's what it looked like. Every single thing that went against us, anytime someone tried to approach or make any kind of comment, it was just, they're brushed aside. Straight away, like, there's nothing there. I don't really agree with that. Like, look, you're not going to stop the game for 5 minutes to have a discussion, but at least hear something out.
Well, I'd say if you got any player in one of those chairs now and said, what's the one thing really lacking with referees? I don't think they'd say they can't make a decision or they don't understand the rules or whatever. It would be, you can't talk to them.
Yeah, their approachability. Like,
we spoke to one of the players, Ben, you were there for that early in the season, and one of those players did say that, like, there's very few refs in the league that you can actually talk to. I just think that's mad. I think it's wrong. It just aggroes the whole thing. Everyone's angry then. And that particular player did say that, like, refs would often say, like, oh, stop shouting. But, like, you're in the middle of a game in front of 4,000 people. Like, you're running around, running into people at full force. Like,
you're obviously going to...
You're not going to whisper.
It's not a library.
Sorry about that, referee. Any chance I could have a discussion with you there?
Love Island, can I pull you for a chat?
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit of give and take.
Can I just say that this year it feels, I'm not saying they've improved their standards, but it feels like we're talking about them less in the last few weeks.
Oh, 100%.
100%. I would agree. I think they have kind of improved overall. I think there's a little bit more cohesion there between referees, fourth official, linesman. Like, I think there is a lot going on there. I think it is improving, like everything in our game recently, and especially in the last year. So there's nothing in terms of the standards. I just think you need to bring in that approachability and that kind of, not justifying what they've done, but maybe having listened to any kind of opinion on it.
I think gagging them is the wrong way of going about it. Like, if we lose and there's something terrible happens, like, the players have to face the music, the managers come out and face the music. Like, there just seems like, you wonder where the accountability is. I'm not saying throw a fella under the bus because he gets a decision wrong, but like, some of the decisions, like, you think back last season where a referee would make a really poor decision and he'd be involved with that team that he'd wronged the very next week. Like, you'd wonder, is there any kind of cohesion in there? I know there's been a lot of change in the way the referees are administered. Like, if you don't remember back, I can't remember what game it was, but it was a referees protest And it was, you know, the weirdest protest that's ever happened. They just decided to come down late. But I do feel that there's ways and means that you could actually improve the situation by having a better and more open relationship with referees. And like one of the only kind of high profile times we've heard from their representative was on LOI Central last year.
A holy show of
and
himself.
It came across arrogant. Mm-hmm. Don't question us. We know what we're doing. We're better than what you think we are. There's no issues. There's no. We get most decisions right. Real just condescending, pie in the sky stuff.
Didn't he come out with the stat? He had a percentage of the amount of decisions they got right, but that's including like a throw in.
And
like everything.
Yeah.
So. Like most of us, I'd say, would have a high percentage of it right.
It was one of those where I do feel that, like, there's a lot of improvements that the game has made, but the referees being so important, but also so anonymous, it still strikes me as weird. Like, you don't want Mark Clattenburg celebrity referees.
No.
But there's probably a middle ground where anytime I've approached them, and generally it's always with a few points. I find it very approachable. And
I will go on record, right? Most refs are sound. When, like, I'm not having to obviously deal with them, they're not giving a penalty against me or not sending me off, but most of them, like, are pretty sound fellas. They're probably there, got involved for the right reasons. But it's just as you said it there, like, on LOI Central that time, is there any wonder players aren't allowed to talk to the referees when he wouldn't even really field questions off two presenters in his studio.
Yeah.
So, like, what hope have you got?
Or he's just lying to their face.
Yeah, and then the refs can't, like, you're not going to, if you're told to do A, you're not going to go and do B and C, because otherwise you're just not going to get any high-profile games. You're not going to get the good games. You'll end up, no disrespect, but doing, like, Kerry v. Longford or something like that in front of a couple of men and their dogs, so.
The El Burco.
Yeah. But the other part of it is with refs and, I don't think it's very often that a ref costs you a game of football.
Not often, but it does happen, and it's happened to us.
Cup final.
No.
2013, no?
Oh, I thought you meant 2022.
Oh, no. Oh, it wasn't the referee causes that final, though.
Yeah, no, that's one, and we honour that. That lives in honour on our podcast.
It does.
On your podcast, I should say. But there was, there's been one or two, like the big one that stands out is handball in Dalymount last year in the Cup.
But do you not think that's one instant in 90 plus minutes of football? Like you've got 89 other minutes to affect the game positively.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it's lazy to just say, oh, the ref cost us 3 points there.
As we know, we got fined for I realised you can get fined for a social media caption. Reggie, he's not with us. He's not dead. He's just
at a wedding.
He's just he's in the pub.
Shock.
After we lost 3-2 to Rovers out in Tala last year, it was, look, I think if he had 5 more minutes, he wouldn't use the caption. But he the word was robbed. We probably felt like that at the time, but it wasn't Rob Harvey or the officials that robbed us. It was like we were winning that game. I think we were 2-1 up. We were 2-0 up.
2-0, wasn't it?
We were 2-0 up and you lose 3-2. You feel robbed. You don't have to blame the referee for robbing you. You feel robbed. But obviously the interpretation of the disciplinary control unit was a little bit different to ours. But I do think it's probably rare enough that the referee affects a game in a way that decides it. And I do think they're getting more decisions right this season.
Yeah, well, there's less. I know it's a dangerous game looking to Twitter or X for the opinion of
rational
people is the word. See the teacher, Ben.
Oh, there's the line.
You can't beat it. But there's not as many howlers going on social media this year, I don't think.
Well, I think TV's played a big part of it, right? Not because I think referees are afraid to make mistakes because it's on telly, but I think they're able to analyse their performance in a much better way than they previously would have been.
Surely the refs get the footage of the games that aren't on telly, no?
Back in the M&S days, like the DVD days, do you imagine you're posting DVDs to each referee of the game they did? And like I'd imagine now with a stream, you get a wee transfer link, you can watch your game back, and you can really self-assess much quicker that, look, it would be, I'd love to have a referee on the podcast. It'd be great to have one in.
I'd say the problem there, that they all think they're going to get caned, I'd say. Whereas I'd love to just...
pick the brain, just...
Yeah, the problem is they're probably just going to give you those kind of...
rehearsed answers.
Yeah, just, you know, I'd love to, like...
it was an honest chat.
Really, the best thing is to sit down and have a few pints. That's really where you're going to get the truth.
I don't know about that.
Isn't it? Well, look. I don't know how far there we can go. I think we'll leave that. Moving swiftly on. So we don't mind referees here. It's the gist of all that.
He's got a new phrase.
That's not the
we don't mind referees.
Referees are all right. They're not the worst. Ben, the reaction of the away crowd to the final whistle on Friday probably told a lot about that performance in the last 15 minutes, didn't it? A real, you actually seen it more on the highlights. It was celebrated like a win, really. But holding on with 9 players away from home in a place we haven't done overly well could be a huge point, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think if you look at it, like, to the end of the season, it could be, I don't want to say season defining, but it's one of those where it could, it's a difference maker, I think. And if, yes, like, if you look at the stats of the game, long and short, with the 20 odd minutes of 9 men versus 11, it's never going to be easy. I can't imagine it was easy on the body, but Warriors, just all of them, they went out there, they put everything on the line to earn that point, and it was a point very well earned, I'd say.
There was a bit of worry, I could see it in your face on Thursday, because you were in charge of the manager's interview after the game, and that can be a nerve-wracking experience at the best of times.
Yeah, because last time you were in charge, you got banned.
Hold on, no, that is...
He's gone mad!
Hold on, that's not entirely true.
He's gone mad!
No, please, let me have the floor. Because some of us
here,
go on...
Here, you hold the pen, it's your turn to speak.
Some of us like to go on 10 jolly ups a year and go to about 60 weddings. So I've actually interviewed the manager once this year, and he hasn't gotten banned. When you were at wedding number 7 probably this year... Now you're on wedding 15, so hopefully I get one or two more opportunities.
They're other people's weddings, not his own wedding.
Yeah. Hopefully I'll get another opportunity by the end of the season. I won't get him banned again. I didn't get him banned, actually. It was someone else that got him banned.
Ben, are you saying he got himself banned?
Ben. No, I'm not saying he got himself banned. I'm saying...
Tell us how you got the manager banned.
I didn't get the manager banned. It was a particularly frustrating night. I think we just got beaten by Rovers and Tala. Was it 2-1?
A referee decision went bad against us.
It was.
It's funny, we've just been talking about how they're much better now. This one was particularly shocking.
It was a referee decision that went against us, and it's why I was nervous again for the Thursday game. And yeah, he was critical, but it was constructive criticism, I felt. Again, the disciplinary committee did not feel that way.
It wasn't even, like...
It wasn't that bad at all.
I actually don't remember this. I don't know. What did he say? Or
he spoke very generally and said, you know, encourage the players to have courage and be brave. And I encourage referees to do the same. Make the big decision. Are you going to give a penalty against Shamrock Rovers in the 89th minute to deny them a victory?
That's pretty soft. I would have said, like, that's not
very, very soft.
Was this though when the manager was at the height of his, everyone was just completely obsessed with every single word that came out of his mouth? Do you think it was around that kind of time?
That's been a long period.
It's probably still going on now.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Yeah, we can't. You can't say a thing without others from across the road from picking up on it. It's like you're not going to enjoy your big point earned or your 3 points lost. No.
I remember the same season. I did LOI TV for one of the games, and it was a game we beat Bowes 1-0 in Talca, and Connolly got sent off for, was it Elbow and Tyreek or JR?
It was Tyreek, I think.
Yeah, and the LOI TV commentator does the pre-match and post-match interviews. I interviewed Declan Devine afterwards, and he just buried the referee. It was your man, Arnie from the Northern Irish FA.
Yeah.
Arnold Hunter.
Yeah.
And he hadn't done a game in a long time. And I actually thought he was fine. I thought he got the red card right. It wasn't a massive game change decision. Run over an elbow fell in the head. You give the referee a decision to make. But he was basically being like, he shouldn't be down here. He's not fit. He's not sharp. He doesn't know the league.
Well, neither should you, Declan. You shouldn't be down here either. So, look.
And he no longer is. and subsequently left. But I remember because I was pretty shocked that I was like this. It felt very vindictive. It didn't feel like it was done in isolation. It felt like, you know, a horse head in the bed. It's to send a message that lay off fucking refs here. Because there was way worse said that entire time.
So you think he got the brunt of maybe what other people have been saying? Because Stephen Bradley came out with something outrageous at the time as well.
They shouldn't be. None of them should ever referee again. Yeah. But the exact words, exact quote. So yeah, it was. I dislike Ben sometimes about it, but it's not your fault, Ben. It was a very unfortunate and unlucky time, and the problem with these things are, and again, probably boring people with stuff that they actually aren't very interested in, but the way a disciplinary charge works, and I think this is fucking bizarre, but the FAI more often than not will be the one that charge you to the independent disciplinary control unit. That's nothing to do with them, completely separate, but they refer you. So I think, fair enough, if you've upset Stephen Doody and he thinks you've really gone over the line, Stephen Doody should refer you to the disciplinary control unit. But I find it strange that the league office refer, and based off the back of an interview. Like,
so the league snitched to the disciplinary control, pretty much.
My understanding is that's how it works all the time. So the league tell the DCU, instigate proceedings against this person. And the disciplinary control unit is independent. It's an independent arm of the FAI, but it's the FAI that...
Surely there's an extra like step in there for that you don't really need to have.
Well, it would make sense for the DCU to be the ones...
That's what I mean. Surely they're the ones that should be watching for comments and all this type of crap.
But I just think, I find it very strange that, you know, a few lines in a Dan McDonald article can be the basis of a charge, because not in no way to cast any kind of aspersions, but what if the quote was wrong? Or what if the sub-editor got it wrong? Or what if they misread it? Or if there was a word used wrong? Like, I think, like, in that instance, you'd want it to be very, very watertight. And I just think when I looked across all the, there wasn't a single manager banned for comments last year except Damien Duff.
But it was all about context for that quote. Like, in isolation, it can look as if it's cutting someone apart, but when you actually hear it, it's just, look, you need to show courage. It's, I tell the players to do it. I just hope the referees can do it. Like, it was more, like, it wasn't an attack on them. It was just, again, he says it a lot, standards, and it's about raising those standards. And I think it was kind of you look at him as, yeah, look, we'll pin it, and he can be the one of, he's the marker here, of he's the one that's got the fine.
Wasn't even the worst thing he said about refs that year.
No.
Or any, like...
Wasn't even the worst thing he said about referees that night.
But yeah, I think maybe we should stop talking about the independent...
Yeah, that's probably, they're probably listening. Actually, no, they're not. The FAI might be listening, and then they'll go and tell the disciplinary unit, whatever they're called.
I think I told a story on the podcast before, but at one of the FAI media officer workshops, which are absolutely comedic in nature.
Oh, they should be recorded.
They're absolutely incredible. Live streaming, honestly.
The barbs are amazing. Like, a lot of people who hate each other just spending their whole time trying to have little digs at each other while the other's talking. It's fantastic. But someone from an unnamed First Division club, which, even if I named them, you'd probably say, who are they? Asked the FBI, were they monitoring their personal Twitter? So the FBI said, I don't even know who you are.
Talk about cutting somebody in two. Look.
We love the FAI.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
The FAI are our friends. 18 long, long years. Ben, I don't know, were you in nappies in 2006? What age are you now? 6? 12?
Jeez, I'm not that old.
8 or 9? Jeez, Ben's a slow learner.
I was 8, Duty, but thanks very much.
8,
I
still in nappies, Ben.
I think I was out of the nappies at that stage, to be honest.
Yeah, I should hope so. but, oh, that tickled me. The point was, 18 years ago, this week, the Reds played their last game in Europe. Talca, and this week it's back after 18 years of way, way, way more misery than good. It's a bit of a mad feeling, isn't it?
I genuinely didn't think we'd ever get back. There were days where, like, you worry if you get back to the Premier Division, if you'll get back to the First Division playoffs. Like, there were really, really grim days going nowhere, and you're thinking, ah, Shells will be that team. I think what really did it for me was when people started to feel sorry for us.
Yeah.
Like, you live through the people absolutely hating Shells, and that was fine and dandy. That was great, actually. But then when you leave through people being like, oh, it's sad, this sad state of affairs, what's happening in Shells, that was really grim, because the pity was worse than the vitriol.
I remember when I started seeing, like, Bowls and Rowers fan stuff saying, ah, it'd be good for the league if Shells got back promoted. Like, ah, I'd rather stay in the First Division and be dealing with that kind of stuff.
Football friends.
Like, we really remember Dazzler, the kind of Ajax split, Deportivo, all them great memories. Ben, you've had just pretty much all misery in your Shells time until the last, like, what, 5 years?
Yeah, pretty much. We always say this, myself and Reggie, like, we've only known Shells as, like, a miserable experience, really. Like, we've had a lot more misery than good. In terms of the football we've watched, not in terms of the community, the sense of family and the people we've met there, but the football was grim.
So, Dazzler, I think I asked you this before. Who was the last men's Shells player to score in Europe?
Oh, it's Glenn Crow, isn't it?
Incorrect.
Bobby Ryan?
Incorrect.
Oof. I know the game.
Who's it? Because if you know the name, you should know the player.
Did we not win by a few goals? Or did we win 1-0?
No, you're thinking of Vetra Vilnius. No. The last game was Odense.
Yes.
OB Odense. Do you remember the player now?
No.
Joey Andow. Last player to score in Europe.
I was going to say Joey.
Yeah. But coming into Thursday, home leg is first against St. Joseph's of Gibraltar. Is there a danger? I was messing when the draw was done. I referred to them as bin men. I want to take that back.
Yeah, well, you also said that about Drogheda.
I did, yeah. I said we were going to hop off Drogheda. Yeah. We would have hopped off Drogheda, but we didn't.
Give him the Richie Winter.
Yeah, oh, here we go. But is that...
the Keenan and Kel.
Is that a danger with this Joseph's team? Like, everyone's kind of looking like, they're basically amateurs and this, that and the other. Is there a danger we look past them?
Yeah, look, the long and short of it is we can look past them, fans can look past them, anyone in the world can look past them, but that team, that staff, no one in there is looking past that side. They're going to give them, I assume, the utmost respect. They're going to prepare for the game as if they prepare for every game. So I don't think anyone important is looking past them. I'm not saying we're not important, but
we're not.
You said it, Ben, not me.
That's it.
But do you look, was this kind of the perfect draw in that it's a great trip, like it's a nice weather, all that kind of stuff, and it's also winnable? Do you think we could have gotten a better draw?
Yeah. Yeah, I think probably the North draw is better
from a
winning a game point of view. Like, it's, I think last year they finished second in their league. They're taking 63 points from 25 games. They're used to winning. They're used to winning nearly every week. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if you're playing in the shittest league in the world. If you've lads who are competitive and used to winning, that makes it it's not going to be a bad environment. You know, bad teams don't win every week. Are they the same level of professionalism and as well trained? Probably not. But, like, the Ireland international team went there with championship players, a couple of Premier League players, and struggled. Really, really struggled to get anything out of the game. So, look, I think if you're going there expecting Shells to start playing Samba soccer and to win 3 or 4-0, don't bother, because you'll be disappointed. It's going to be a massively difficult tie, and they've spent the last 2-3 weeks thinking about nothing except knocking us out, and they're probably waiting for everything that can be said, everything that can be written, any little bit of edge they can use. We've had 5 or 6 priorities in that time. That's not to say this hasn't been a priority, but you have to look at the league games you have to look at everything else that's going on, signings, new players, the whole lot. So you'd be absolutely mad to look by them and think it's going to be easy. It's never easy. It's a European tie. The money at stake is massive. And look, you'd imagine a team like that incentivize it for their players to, you know, if you go through a couple of rounds in Europe, there's a few bob for you. And I think if you're a student or a baker or a teacher, you can't put a price on the motivation that would give you. So it's going to be a very, very difficult tie. I'm old enough to remember Hibernians of Malta, where we got beaten by a team that had a literal bin man in goal. He was a literal bin man.
Yeah, they've signed well. Like, I've done a bit of digging on them. They signed three players from
Gibraltar national team.
Yeah, Lincoln Red Imps, who have won three leagues in the Trot, and Joseph's has signed three from there. So, and one of those signings was the captain the day that Gibraltar ran Ireland close. So, no, it's like, I'm joking there about Bimmer and stuff, but you don't, there isn't games like that in Europe. Not anymore. Like, back in the day, maybe you get a few scrap teams in a draw, but it's a difficult tie. The other thing is, well, I may say it now, we'll have a little podcast from Gibraltar next week, I think, will we?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be in the pub and you and Ben will be doing a podcast.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Can we do a podcast from the pub?
That actually might be a bad idea. From what's O'Reilly's, is it?
We did that once during COVID. Yeah. Remember we did it down
any there? Ruffling you'll hear is Darren opening his dry roasted peanuts.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Do you need to do bacon fries in Gibraltar?
No,
they definitely do. You're basically in Britain.
Are they not discontinued now? They're gone.
No, they will be gone.
You'd be on pork scratchings.
They're bad for you. Imagine the only thing that gets banned in a pub for being bad for you is the bacon fries.
I was talking to a fellow at work today who said Gibraltar is a mad experience because it's basically like being in London, but it's like 28 degrees. Like, it's all like the Cock and Hen is the name of the pubs and all that kind of stuff. Man.
Is Gibraltar the place with the monkeys or is that Bali?
No, that's the Rock of Gibraltar. Yeah, the monkeys live on it.
On the rock or on...
No, on the rock. And you don't go near them if you have ice cream, I was told today by that same fellow, because they will attack.
Right, so don't go to the Rock of Gibraltar.
Yeah, don't do any touristy stuff, just go to the pub, go to the game. That's probably the best way to put it. Ben, starting 11 was, I don't know why, but I have a feeling, has Boydie been kind of held back with Europe in mind? The manager spoke before about like he's been injured and managing his, you know, he's had a serious injury.
That's probably a good shout. I never really thought of that. I'm thinking now that the headache that the manager and the staff are going to have even looking to pick a starting 11, especially with the bodies you get in. Like, that's the options in attack are, well, it's a bit of a joke, isn't it?
At this stage, it is.
Like, it's just, you can chop and change to so many kind of combinations you can use. But yeah, I would argue that maybe his minutes have been managed just with these games in mind. They're obviously big ties, but like, it's not going to be easy. I'd love to see him cause a bit of bother. The Elgin Prater lads pushing them around, I'd say, be a great time.
Yeah, I'm here for it. Look, you go into starting 11s and stuff, the long and short of it is, like, nobody... You could have anything. Like, as you say, Ben, we're spoiled now, especially the top end of the pitch, bodies-wise. I did see earlier on that Joseph's trained, they obviously arrived today in Dublin and they were sent up to the AUL in the pissing rain to train up there. Now, if that doesn't put you off, I don't know what possibly could.
I think they love that. You're going from training 30 degree heat down there, Faro, Rock of Gibraltar, wherever they're training. Remember the manager did an interview last week that we're trying to get eyes on them. We don't know where they are in the world. I think they'd love it. Yeah. A nice calm rain.
There's nothing calm about that weather today.
I know
I was laughing because they had photos up on their socials of them waiting to board the plane in Gibraltar. They're all in their shorts and their t-shirt. Hope to God they had their heavy jackets.
They get to the AUL, they get blown away.
It's one of the windiest places on earth. Dazzler, we've gone through this a couple of times, but give me one of your favourite European memories, and don't say Scouser's volley or, you know, Alan Moore's goal. It's just something that kind of sticks out in your brain that when we qualified for Europe again, you kind of went, oh, I can't wait for more of that.
I think there's a photo, and it's one of the few printed photos I own. It's me and I'm so red faced, I'm so sunburned. I'm wearing a jersey that's would fit me now, but at the time was 3 or 4 sizes too big for me. It's Jason Byrne's jersey, and I'm with Jason Byrne and his dad, who was called Square. I don't know what his actual name was, but he said he was named after Square Talla, or it was named after him. and we're in La Coruña. There was a tiny little pub there that Shells fans spent the week at, a little Irish pub naturally. And after the game, all the players came in and they went around thanking everyone for being there and sorry we couldn't get through. And it was just this lovely vibe of, this is amazing, this is lovely. Those few hours after that game were phenomenal, an amazing memory that I thought of. God, wouldn't it be great to be sitting in that, outside that pub, bit of sunburn and whatever drink you have, just looking around, nodding at people, particularly people who've been there a long time and experienced all the misery and were there to see us get back there, being like, yeah, yeah, everyone's happy now. We're all doing good. What else?
I had, Ben, you had the pleasure, while you're thinking, Dazzler, my dad collared you there in Tolka. Was it last Thursday? Was it the Galway game?
Yeah.
No, was that Friday? Or whatever day it was, the Galway game. And in the space of like a 3 or 4 minute conversation, he had regaled you about all these tales of Europe. And I was in his house earlier and I got him to kind of go through them again because some of them are just, it's great. It's what, when I thought of Europe, that is the type of random crack that I think of that's just, most of it's nonsense, but like when they were in Slovenia to play Ljubljana, the Slovenia or the Ljubljana kind of ultras wanted them to fight the police with them. Like my dad, he was not my dad, the most mild mannered fella ever. And like the police are there holding big like machine guns.
He's hitting them with an electric cigarette.
Shooting little bullets out of it. The Ljubljana ultras were like, oh, we'll fight them together, we'll all come together and fight them. Like he has so many of them.
I'm telling you, and I said it to you at the time, get your dad in, sit him down in front of a microphone, get him to send a voice note, get him to interview.
When you, like,
but do that, any of the old Reds, anyone that was there for any European thing, send in a voice note. Like the number, I'm sure, is selective. Those kind of stories are what you want to hear, especially with the away leg. Like you want to hear the travel stories, you want to hear the good, the bad, the ugly. Like you want to hear it all.
100%. Dazzy, you mentioned there about that pub and, is it La Coruña?
A Coruña, I think.
Yeah, well, Deportivo.
Yeah.
Called Deportivo.
Coruña.
There was a pub that was just full of Reds, basically, but a few people branched off to like a smaller little pub off to the side. And the pub was just full of board games. So like my dad, in this mad heat in the middle of July, was sitting there playing Connect Four with other Shells fans. Where would you get it? Absolutely bizarre.
I hear.
Then he was telling me they had to get a train from Deportivo back to like the airport or whatever it was, and they got onto the train, they all bundled in, kind of were all in a carriage together, and they were sitting there going, she's very bleeding dark on this train, what's the fucking story? The two carriages they got onto weren't connected to the main train. So there's no lights rattling on it, and they had to jump off the very last second. Happened to them in Iceland as well, because it doesn't get dark in the summer in Iceland, so they just got totally discombobulated, didn't know what time of the day it was or anything, and nearly missed their bus, and it was only one bus a day.
Oh dear.
Having to pay for more flights to Iceland.
Not going to go down well.
I certainly wouldn't fancy it.
I have a funny story for you.
Go on.
I only got thinking about it today. Obviously, there was a lot of talk about ticketing. And I think the most nervous I've ever been in my life around ticketing was Deportivo in Lansdowne. So I would have been probably 14, 15. Just turned 15. And that, the weeks before that, like, we had nothing to do during the summer. So we'd go up, we'd kick a ball around in Drumcondra, and then invariably just walk over to Tolka and see who was around and what you could do. And it was back then, the bar used to be open during the day, so you'd go in, you'd watch telly, you'd have a Coke, and you'd go home. And we got ended up roped into helping for the Hajduk game. History repeats itself, was assigned seating. So you had to put stickers on all the seats and stickers on all the rows. So myself, John Brennan, who's now at SLO, another lad, Adam O'Brien, who lived near us, and John's nephew, Dylan, just stickered all the seats. Just had another, like, yeah, we'll do it. We'd love to do it. And Ollie promised us that if we get through, I've got your tickets for this one. If we get through, I'll get your tickets for the next one. That was fine. We got through. Amazing. And then we went down to Tolka all the week at Deportivo, even though there wasn't much to do because the game was on in Lansdowne. We'd get the train over and we'd hang around after train or whatever. But Ollie promised he'd get us these tickets, and every time we seen him he'd say, yeah, I used to call John PJ because John's dad's PJ, yeah, PJ, I'll get your tickets, no problem, get them, you and the lads all sorted. So he gets to match day, we're hanging around talking for the day, Ollie's nowhere to be seen, he said he'd 100% be in Talca to give us the tickets on the match day, but he didn't. So we're like, right, we better go to Lansdowne now. He's not coming. So we went over. I don't think we had mobile phones at the time. So we found someone, borrowed a mobile phone. John Brennan rang his dad, PJ, and said, we're outside, we're in Lansdowne Lane. Can you see Ollie Bourne? He's like, Ollie Bourne's kicking off in 15 minutes in the biggest match we've ever played. He's not going to fucking come out to you and give you tickets now. What? Why did you leave it to the last minute? And basically all hope appeared completely lost that there'd be no tickets for the lads and we'd be left outside. So John was asked, if you see Ollie, just tell him we're outside. He'll come out, he'll know what we're talking about. So he goes down to the barrier, finds Ollie's rambling around, says the lads are outside Lansdowne Lane, you go out to him. All he used to have is Nokia, and so I ringed him. It's like, they don't have a phone. So he was going out, sweat pumping, and he walks up Lansdowne Lane. He's got the sandals were even still on at this point, and he kind of ushers the forwards, come on, quick. And he got us in. He followed through on his ticket of promise, and Ollie left no man behind.
Funny you were saying there about Ollie. Calling John his dad's name. He used to do that with my dad. He used to call my dad Sean.
No.
Granddad's name. Yeah. That's last in memory. That and Ollie Bourne just robbing chips. I'd be standing there with me burdocks and Ollie come over taking handfuls of chips off you. You obviously, this is new for you, really. What are you most looking forward to?
Those kind of memories, the things you look back on in 20 years and say, we did this, we did that. And the people you did it with, because those memories, the more you tell them to people, I don't want to be getting too sentimental, but they'll live on, and when we're long gone, it'll be told again, and hopefully when the Reds are still in Europe. So, yeah, those kind of memories, just making them, having them, experiencing things for the first time. Just you were talking about European experience, I don't have very many, but one thing I do remember is Darren for the away leg, ended up on the telly. I don't know if he remembers this, but my mum used to have a video VHS in the house of a recording of the telly of Darren playing football on the beach.
So what happened was RTE went to the wrong hotel. They were looking for the team hotel, and however they got it mixed up, they went to the ones the fans were staying at, and they needed to get footage for, you know, the start of the 6-1 news, yeah, where they're like, and Shelburne fans are in La Coruña. So it was meant to show Shell's players training or doing something. But they went to the wrong hotel, and the cameraman, God help him, pumping with sweat. Because there's Shell's players staying there. He's like, no, they're staying on, I can't remember the name of the hotel, it was one near the beach, the rocks, whatever. And he's like, no, there's no one here except us. He's like, bollocks, he's having football. I was like, yeah. He's like, we'll come and get it. And he's like, just do heads and volleys or something. So it was like, they came up on the start of the 6-1 news on whatever date it is. You could probably find it if you're in the RTE archives. It's like, Shells are in La Coruña, and it's just us playing heads and volleys.
A heavily sunburned child.
But that's probably a lasting memory, because I'd say if you ask my mum, she could probably dig that out somewhere. But I think there's a photo as well printed out in the house of Darren on the beach playing heads and volleys. So
that's class.
We did that for everyone with a camera that day. Like, we've all gone to the wrong hotel. Could you just play heads and volleys or something?
The only away European game I went to was Glentoran.
Grim. Yeah, I'd rather not go to an away European than go there.
Yeah, obviously I have two brothers and my dad, so I think I was the one cut loose.
You have one brother, no?
They're the same person, yeah.
Have you ever told that story on the podcast about Keith McDarby?
Oh God almighty. I have purposely not hammered people from the club, because I just people kept talking about it.
Keith's okay, you can hammer.
Yeah, he does wear dodgy tyres, but anyone that doesn't know, I have twin brothers, and
identical twin brothers.
Yeah, to people that don't know them, I'm sure they do look fairly identical. one brother, Paul, doesn't go so much at the moment because he basically coaches a team that's playing on a Friday, so that's kind of ruled him out for the last little while. But my other brother, Alan, is at pretty much every game, home and away. And he went down to Talca. So my brother used to work on the course with Jason McGuinness, that Jay has obviously subsequently left, so has my brother. But that's how we got to know Keith.
And you know him well, like?
Oh yeah, Paul had known Keith because they were liaising. Like, Keith was out to have put on a presentation for the group and all that type of stuff. So Alan went down to Talca one day to, I think was he collecting something or
tickets for the Waterford game in the cup semi, wasn't
it? That's what it was. He was getting his tickets for the cup semi final. And he walked in, and like Alan wouldn't have known Keith from Adam, because like why would he he'd have no reason to know him. And Keith was like, "Ah, how you doing, you big bollocks," or something like that, and like hit me brother and hit Alan on the back, and was like, "Ah, how are you getting on?" Like all this kind of insider talk. And now Alan has this habit of if somebody mistakes him for Paul, he just goes with it, just to kind of mess with people a little bit. So he let Keith go, and Keith was going and going and going, and he was like, "Ah, see you later, you big bollocks," and all this type of stuff. So Alan just said nothing, didn't say a thing, and then I think he rang me and was like, "You're not going to believe this. It was your man down in Talk. I thought it was Paul. He kept calling me Paul and calling me all these names and all the rest of it." So yeah, he mistook one brother for the other, but Paul, who does know Keith, just thought it was the funniest thing in the world. And now every time Keith sees Alan and Talca, he goes, "Oh, hey, Paul." I'll give him a little tap on the back. But yeah, Keith, you dropped a major clanger.
I remember Keith said to me, he's like, you've been chatting to Doody. I'm like, "Yeah, why?" He's like, "Is everything okay with his brother? Like, I saw him talking today. He's a bit off of me. Like, I do something wrong, or is everything on the course okay?" I was like, and I asked you, I was like, "Hey, what is there, you know, what happened there?" And you're like, "Oh, yeah, that was Alan. Wasn't the same fella."
Yeah, because he kept I think he thought then the people were kind of taking the piss a bit, Keith, that he thought there wasn't a twin brother. "Ah, no, he's messing with me. But yeah, believe it or not, there was two. But that Glentoran, were you up in Glentoran?
Yeah.
Oh, walking through the cage, getting the armed escort from, was it Monaghan?
Yeah.
Oh, grim experience.
Jeeps and the bikes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You had to walk through like this cage to get into, is the Oval they playing?
Was the Oval? The Oval's Glentoran, yeah.
Yeah. You walk through this cage to get into the ground because obviously not an overly friendly area.
Yeah.
And there's like grown men with Rangers jerseys and all just watching you think a few things were thrown at the cage. And like, it was
a few things were thrown back from the cage as well. There was probably
eight or nine years of age walking through this cage going, "Why are these grown men throwing stuff at me?"
Because they thought you were 40.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Real mature.
If anyone see a 9-year-old dude, you'd be like, "Nah, Pat Mustard."
Real mature. I did put out the question box asking just for memories, European memories, good, bad, ugly, whatever you thought of straight away or what you're looking forward to. Luke Byrne 07, not that Luke Byrne.
Can we just stop saying that? We all know it's not that Luke Byrne.
Yeah. Well, I just, especially with this comment, I feel like I need to clarify. He said, "The misery of getting done in the first round." Is that not Shell's pessimism?
Ah, move on.
Just at its best. Ryan Marin buzzing to see the atmosphere in the Riverside. Indeed.
Well, I don't know. Like, it's. Has it been great? And the people who make it great are not the problem. It's the people who want to be there, right? Because people make it great. So the atmosphere was better in 22 and for 23 because the people who've always made the atmosphere are amazing. What's happened is people see it on TikTok or Instagram and they come and they want to experience it, but they don't want to contribute to it. So what you have is this amazingly massive stand where the people who have always done the amazing, and this is why I kind of, the whole conversation irks me because it feels almost disrespectful to the people who are making an amazing atmosphere there, but there's too many passengers and I think a lot of them are younger and I think a lot of them are probably newer where they mightn't realise that if you're going to be in the middle of the Riverside, to fucking sing and wave your flag and get involved. You're not just there to vape and shoot TikToks.
Comb your hair. Sell down over there.
Is that harsh?
No, I'd agree. Like, if you're going to sit in the singing section, the least you can do is sing. And look,
just don't wave your flags. Yeah. You're not allowed to wave flags while the game's going on.
That's true. But like, fair enough, you don't know the chants. You listen once, pick up on them. Even if you don't know the chants, just shout something. Just do anything, just try and get involved. Like, the more you're there, the more you'll learn, the more you'll hear it, and the better everything will be. But like, it is not a good position for the lads that have been there for so many years and have done absolutely wonderful work to create atmospheres and do a lot of it when times weren't great. Like, there's a lot of really good Reds there and you know that they're doing their best and they're trying every week with everything they do, so you just hope it all clicks. I think it will. I think the more people are there, the more they get used to the chants and the better the atmosphere will be.
The people who've made it the best stand in the country are not the issue. it's the people who've been attracted to it being the best stand in the country.
That's a fair point.
So the people who want to sit in it, want to experience it, but it's not passive. You have to ride the horse. Get on it.
There's a reason we don't sit in the Riverside, and it's just because if we can't contribute, you probably, I don't know, should find a better seat for yourself. Is that a bit harsh?
No, I don't think so. Thursday will be interesting, though, because obviously it's a UEFA thing. You have to have a signed seat. And
yeah, I think it'll be okay.
Like, use your common sense. Like,
yeah, like, obviously, you know, it's assigned seating because it's UEFA mandate. It's not a Shells are saying you have to assign seating. Like, it'll be a strange enough situation that there'll be no standing in the Drumcondra end because people have probably stood there for 20 years. But it's one of the things you just have to accept when you play in European competition. You have to play by UEFA rules. Like, in one sense, you'd imagine that everyone who'll be there, there'll be a very small minority who are experienced in Shells for the first time. So I wouldn't be worried about it. Look, you don't want people to get too... Like, it should be an amazing occasion. There'll be extra stewards there to help people find seats. And I think the people will mostly sit where they should be sitting.
Yeah, common sense should prevail.
Yeah, it really should. Like, I don't think you're going to have an occasion where... And it's impossible because, you know, the club has this week worked with some of the fans groups to make sure, you know, you won't have a groundhopper from Djibouti sitting in the first row of the Riverside to sit there with his arms folded and not contribute. Like, there's been efforts made behind the scenes to make sure that blocks go to the groups that create the atmosphere. And I think that's a very common sense approach rather than trying to wrangle everyone to buy their own tickets. Because what you do have is people will want to sit in the middle of the Riverside to just sit there. So, no, I think it'll be good. And I'd actually think that the best atmosphere we've had all season will be on Thursday.
Fingers crossed.
Prediction.
BC from Reds Independent was on with his memory, and he said, being asked to leave Matthew's bar in La Coruña for laughing at some skin dressed as a leprechaun. An Irish side on the brink of history, and we were treated to that nonsense. That is nonsense. That's goonery. Don't show up dressed as a leprechaun in Gibraltar, whatever you do.
If you do, you'd be sent back to Malaga.
Not wise. A lot of people saying they're just most looking forward to a European atmosphere. Alan Moore, this was Liam Byrne.
Alan Moore text?
Alan Moore scoring in Split was my good memory. The Torcida Ultras were amazing to see, but the Steaua Bucharest fans were very ugly. I presume he means like in their actions, not in
their appearance.
Their appearance, yeah. I don't think you can say that. One of said brothers, the one who got mistaken for the other one, was on saying Slovenia away, summer 2003, had my first Bacardi Breezer at the ripe old age of 14.
I tell your dad was so disappointed. I read that Breezer as well. Have a pint for fuck's sake.
I read that out earlier on in front of me dad and my ma, and my ma wasn't impressed. 14? No. Did you buy him that? And my dad said, no, I didn't buy him that.
Your dad would not order Bacardi Breezer.
My dad's not a drinker.
So. Yeah, but he still wouldn't order. Even your dad would know Bacardi Breezers are cringe.
I actually think Liam Byrne's dad might have been the man that bought the bottles for my brother, but look. That's neither here nor there. He also said the 26-seater plane from Frankfurt is definitely where my fear of flying came from. That was going from Frankfurt to Slovenia, I think.
This little
dingy little plane. And he hasn't been a great old flyer ever since, in fairness. ODS FC said Trevor Malloy touching the ball just before it crossed the line versus Hibs and Malta. Do you remember that? I think he was called offside for it, wasn't he? There was a ball pretty much going in the net and Trevor Malloy stuck a foot out to... I don't know. That's before my time. So
I know everyone who was there reflects on it like Vietnam.
Yeah, it's a mad one, isn't it? Yeah. It was like 2008. That same kind of doom and gloom about it. Look,
remember chatting to Ollie Cal and trying to make a joke about it. It was like, look, time is a healer. And he goes, no, it fucking isn't.
Oh, that was when we done the live pod in the bar.
He was still perturbed and bothered by it.
Big T said, the bad were the mistakes we made in Bucharest. I only watched the highlights of this earlier. Dave Crawley's shanked clearance. Oh, what might have been.
Because he'd been so good for the Reds before that. And then just
so good. Yeah, he just imploded. Mm. Big T also said, also remember after every goal in the stadium in Romania, they played Scooter, I Like It Loud. That's a poxy tune. You are right. And DLB Photography said, I'm not looking forward to the you're in my seat brigade.
I don't think there'll be.
It won't happen.
Yeah, it won't.
So it won't be allowed to happen. Quickly, before we go, because we've digressed a couple of times here, Richie Rankins. Obviously, Richie Winters.
Did you just say Richie Wankins?
No, I didn't. No, I did not say that.
You're so childish. Poor dude.
I said Richie Rankings.
You're really enunciated there.
Use your words, Doodles.
The Witchy Wankins.
Webbit.
So, Richie Baker is obviously sound. Who was your Richie Baker for this week, Darren Cleary?
Oh, my Richie Baker for this week. Go to Ben first.
Ah, you didn't even prepare. Ben.
Didn't even prepare.
Luke Bourne.
This birthday.
Not that Luke Bourne. It's not a birthday thing. Club captain, former club captain and technical director, Luke Bourne. If you know, look, the work that he does behind the scenes is absolutely incredible. Getting signings over the line, like those three lads aren't in the door without Luke Bourne. So happy birthday and keep them coming. So it has to be him.
Part of me, it makes me sad that Luke won't be on the pitch on Thursday. Just for the those kind of...
He does deserve it, but I don't know. I think it's such a strange one because you just wanted him to just have that one more year left.
Yeah.
I think he's in a really best of both worlds position because he can sit there, drink it in, and hopefully realise the massive part he had to play in the club being there. But do it without the pressure of...
Yeah, just get to enjoy it.
Yeah, your knees getting injected in the pain, and I'm not trying to make light of it, but I would imagine he, in some ways, would be happier...
Not having to put himself through hell.
Yeah, yeah, to get onto the pitch. And to be fair, he left before anyone knew, like, not before, he was still himself. He got to finish his career looking like himself. The body didn't break down. He never became a liability or
never a shell of himself.
Again. Yeah, he was amazing to the last. I'm going to give my Richie Baker to Esco Hook, who is the graffiti and mural painter who made the incredible.
That's class.
Incredible.
It is class.
And look, a bit of credit. It's probably a bit insular to mention people, but Pierce Butler works away in the background on loads of different things. Like he's been involved in the new PA system, the playlist has improved. You had a whinge and moan about Pickback being back last week. To be fair, it's been there once all season, so we're not too bad.
Well, it shouldn't be there.
I know. But, you know, sometimes when, you know, the teacher goes out to get their apple, people will play Pickback, you know?
We'll be blaring La Bamba now if Sean Boyle pops up with a goal.
I would be very happy to hear La Bamba back in Talca Park. But it's the mural's amazing, and I think there is a feeling in the club now about the importance of this stuff. And for the first time, we can look forward and not back and not worry about what's coming. It'd be weird to let the podcast pass without mentioning Andrew Doyle, because probably none of it happens without what he did. There's a very fine line between a madman and a visionary. And when he came in what, 2018, and started talking about getting Shells to Europe, well, Shells couldn't even get near a playoff in the first division, you probably would have thought, nah, here, forget it. This fella isn't going to be able to, he can think it, he can believe it, but it'll never happen. He had a vision, he played a massive role, and like there's loads of people, like on the pitch you talk about Luke Bourne, off the pitch you talk about Duffer, the staff, the players, then even further off it, there's people who have played a massive, massive role. He's one of them. He kind of just left without any limelight or fanfare. Very much his style. But there should be a massive amount of credit at some stage when the story of Shells is written down and where did it come from. You go back to him getting involved and we get to the end of, what was it, 2018. Owen Heary, heartbreak in a playoff. You're thinking, just give him another year, see how we go. No. Ian Morris won the first division 2021, two promotions in 3 years, just give him another year. No. That is vision. That is ambition. That is what's got us on the path to where we are today. So I just thought it'd be important to mention.
Hear, hear. My Richie Baker is Duffer. Just for the fact that we are in the position we're in, going to play European football on Thursday, top of the league, I fancy us to win the cup. It's the job he's done in the short time he's been here has been nothing short of incredible. He's changed the club's mentality from, oh, like, you know, being in the Premier Division is great, to, no, that's not good enough, we need to qualify for Europe. And now it feels like Thursday is the kind of end of that first part of the plan. I think that first part of the plan was European football, and that's done. We've done that. Let's push on to the next bit. So, yeah, my Richie Baker is duffer just for having us in the position we're in. I'll start my Richie Winter, Ben, before I throw over to you. Whoever started the League of Ireland Roblox, what is that about? Can anyone explain that to me?
No.
I can't even explain it to you, and you know me, I'm usually good for pop culture stuff, but I genuinely have no
idea. What is going on?
I have no idea what that is.
Like, I've seen, don't remember who it was, like, just say, oh, I was treated, like, won the Roblox Premier Division. What are they talking about? Is Roblox not, like, leading Warhammer or something like that from back in the day?
No, Warhammer is this thing that you actually buy.
Not, like, I don't get it. So whoever is encouraging that, P45 in the post, I would hope.
I had a mate of mine, and he was one of the earliest adapters of social media back in 2004. And he's on this thing called Habbo Hotel. So in Habbo Hotel, you're like a little sim. So you, like, you make yourself a little character, but it's done like a hotel. So there's, like, there's rooms. There's, like, the Doody room, the Ben room, and it's free to have Habbo Hotel. But to put stuff in your room, you have to buy credits with actual physical money, like credit cards. So he was going on spending his man's credit card buying, like, couches and
buying a new bed for his hotel,
couches and lava lamps and all this stuff. And obviously the lads got wind of this one day, and he still gets slagged about to this day. How's your gaff? Any real furniture?
It's not him, is it?
Who? No, sorry.
Oh, you said Eddie there.
No.
Bringing back flashbacks.
No. But yeah, I don't know how I got on that Roblox. But yeah. At least Warhammer was a thing. You got a little, I don't know what you call it, little toy or something.
Yeah, pretty much. Like play soldiers. Who's your Richie Winter? No, Ben, sorry, I said I was going to you. Who's your Richie Winter?
It has to be admin for the League of Ireland women's page for the Noel Murray shout.
Explain it, Ben.
Nearly treated to a Noel Murray 90th minute winner, I think was captioned thereabouts. We weren't actually, because she was suspended and wasn't playing.
Yeah, she wasn't on the pitch. Yeah, that's what I call dropping a clanger.
Little bit of a clanger, but I will say overall those pages this year, especially both on the men's and women's side, have been absolutely incredible. They've been really well done. The stats stuff, the graphics with the quotes. I saw it this week with the manager's quotes from interviews, team news, whatever. They've put so much effort and so much work into it. So maybe it is a little bit unfair to call out just one small little clanger, but it made me laugh, gave me a little chuckle. So yeah, why not? But the work they do and the work they have done, especially this season, is incredible.
An honourable Richie Winter mention for anyone who supports the other League of Ireland teams in Europe. That's a massive problem.
Like, I hope they all lose.
Doing great for the league.
Brilliant. Oh. Actually, if you sit down and think, what would Shamrock Rovers getting €900,000 in prize money, how would that be good for Shell or UCD or Treaty?
Do you know what they'll come back
with? You big dope.
The coefficient. That affects four teams. And not like it's generally the same teams.
If you can't spell coefficient, you're not allowed to be excited about it.
Jesus Christ, shooting from the hip.
Give me a Richie Winter.
A League of Ireland TikTokers. Just generally League of Ireland TikTokers.
Scintillating.
Like, I think there's a little bit. Like, Pats are doing really poorly this season. And everyone now is pretending that they weren't tipping them up. Everyone was tipping them up. Their signings looked really, really good at the start of the season. The recruitment looked good. They got their business done early. They got players that loads of other teams were chasing after. Keely, Keating, the two that probably stick out. But I saw one particular TikToker who, someone had like done a side-by-side of like the first TikTok reacting to a player signing, and then them saying, he has to go. Like rage bait merchants. People who just say things for attention.
The farming reactions.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, people who dip chips in ice cream. call themselves nasty.
Have you ever dipped a McDonald's chip into a plain McDonald's ice cream?
Look, I'm fine with that, but then putting it in between two slices of bread and then, you know, rubbing your arse on it and putting Bischoff sauce on it. Like, no.
Put strange. What sauce on it?
Bischoff sauce. What's it called?
Eric Bischoff sauce.
Biscoff?
Biscoff. Biscoff, yeah. Biscoff. Jesus, sorry. Wet.
I'm back.
My God.
Eric Bischoff.
Bischoff sauce.
Let's stick to let's stick to what we're talking about here, people.
Yeah, what we're talking about is the end of the podcast, actually. We're actually gone over time. This always happens when you're here because you throw me off kilter. When me and Ben do this, I was really structured and like real.
Dude, it really isn't. You say we're going to do 40 minutes.
And, every
and
single
then we
week.
Do over an hour and you're like, ah, no, why did you let me do that?
Every week before we record, I say to Ben, no, 40 minutes is the perfect time. Don't think I've ever done a 40-minute podcast. But and go on, you were going to say something.
I was just wondering, like last week, I thought you took the reins very well by playing Daddy Cool at the end. Oh, yeah. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
So you own the end of this podcast.
Yeah, DJ Duty in the house.
DJ Duty.
Oh, look here.
He's opening up his bag. He's looking through his records.
He's brought one record.
What is he going to play? DJ Duty, spin that shit.
Oh, here we go.
Thanks for listening to the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne FC, Dublin's finest since 1895. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify and subscribe now to never miss a new episode.